Right.
I'm going to go for a few minutes about my favorite topic. My favorite topic is when I speak loud, it's just a sign for other people to speak in the louder so they can hear themselves. That's not really going to help. I can't start without Natalia Sorella calling. And of course, Moshe Gabriel is pumping his fist. That is Moshe Gabriel's way of saying, God, I love you. We're going to talk about something that's very, when I say we are going to talk, of course I mean we, meaning me to you, and not you to each other. So I'd like your help in that. And if it's a shame, if afterwards we would like to talk, I'm always, as I've made it clear in the past, I'm always available to talk to anybody. As a matter of fact, sometimes I can't find anybody to talk to, so I walk downstairs and I just start talking to a wall. In any event, the Torah tells us, but a holy wall. The Torah tells us that that there's this mitzvah that I'm commanding you. This is chapter, for those of you on the more scholarly predilection, chapter 30, verse 12, the mitzvah, 11, the mitzvah that I'm commanding you is not too far away from you. It's not in the heavens. You can do it. What mitzvah is this? So the rabbi of the local shul, there's a local shul here, which is affectionately named the Ramban. Most times they don't name the shul after the rabbi, but sometimes they do actually. This is the shul de Ramban. Ramban was Moshe ben Nachman. He lived in Spain about 800 years ago. He said he lived from like 1215 to 1255. Like he lived for, what is that, 40 minutes? So, okay, think about it, 1215 to 40 minutes. It's good. So, anyway, the story goes that he had a whole debate. He got in trouble. Whatever it was, he had a debate with a Christian. He won the debate. But when you win, you lose. So he had to run to Eretz Yisrael, and he built a shul right here in the old city of Jerusalem, which I'm zochet to daven in quite often. So when he wasn't, you know, taking care of his shul, he was writing his commentary in the Torah. And the commentary says that this mitzvah is the mitzvah of tshuva. Tshuva means to come to God, to come close to God, to return to God. So he says that the Torah says it's not hard. It seems to me that it is hard. But tonight we're going to try to understand how it's not so hard. How can a person... And everybody wants to, I'm 100% completely convinced beyond any shadow of a doubt that every person wants to come close to God. Now we have to know that everybody in this room, by the way, I do have a few hang-ups. I don't have too many hang-ups, but I have a few hang-ups. One of them is cellular phones. Whenever I see a cellular phone in the middle of a shiur, I always get jealous because I don't own one. But the, what? Oh, then it's Beseder for taking notes. So I just ask that people not be... Unless sometimes I know people are texting other people to, you know, tell them what I'm saying in the middle of the shiur, but otherwise I ask you not to be playing with them or listening to them, etc. Thank you. So now that I've told you my problems, now I have to pay you for psychological counseling. The Torah says it's not so hard. We're going to describe tonight, we're going to explain how you can do it in one easy step. One easy step and you can get close to God. And as I said, I'm convinced that everybody in this room, every handsome guy in this room, which of course means you, that every handsome guy in this room really wants to come close to God. Now, as I was starting to say, everybody has a godly soul and an animal soul. A nefesh habehemis and a nefesh halokis. What is the animal soul? The animal soul likes breakfast, likes girls, likes sleeping, likes movies, and, in the worst case scenario, likes weed. Then there's the nefesh halokis. The nefesh halokis likes God, likes Torah, likes mitzvahs, likes rabbis, likes Yerushalayim, likes Tzvi Moshe Cantor. So that's the nefesh halokis. We have the godly soul and the animal soul. So tonight, I'm talking to your godly soul. Your animal soul isn't interested. Your animal soul is thinking that they heard that in a Tiva Aryeh at 2 o'clock in the morning they have a lot of food. So that's what your animal soul is interested in. Your animal soul is looking at the clock. Clock is... I'm saying Zman is Gematria Behemah Va'adam together. So your animal... You can figure it out. Your animalistic soul was looking at the clock and is saying, when is it going to end? So I want you, just for, if you can, for a short while, to open up your godly soul. And once that godly soul is open, then the animal soul just completely disappears because the godly soul is much more potent than the animal soul. Okay, so I'm going to tell you a story that I actually heard first person from a person who was in a mental institution. This is, again, the goal is eventually to get to, in one easy step, how to do tshuva. This person was in a mental institution. And he related as follows. One day he's walking down the corridor. It's a true story, and it happened. He's walking down the corridor, and he meets a woman, and he says, "Hello, nice to meet you. What's your name?" And she said, "My name is Joyce." Joyce. So he says, "Nice to meet you, Joyce. Nice to meet you." Okay. Anyway, sometime later, he's walking down the hall again, and guess who he sees?
Joyce.
You guys are so good. Last time, you knew Sam I am. This, he sees Joyce. She says, "Hi, Joyce, how are you?" And she says to him, "I'm not Joyce. I'm Diane." So he said, "This is a little bit strange." Now, we must remember we're in a mental institution, so anything can happen. So he goes up to the psychiatrist, and he says to the psychiatrist, "Something very peculiar happened to me today. I met a woman named Joyce. She identified herself as Joyce. And then when I met her later on, and I said, 'Hi, Joyce,' she claimed that her name was Diane. What's that all about?" The doctor said, "The truth is that her real name is Diane. Joyce is not her real name. The problem is that Diane was beaten by her husband for a long, protracted period of time. And Diane could not defend herself against her husband. So what she did is, she adopted a new identity, and that identity became Joyce. Joyce won't let her husband beat her up. Diane is very vulnerable. Diane is very insecure. Diane is very afraid. But Joyce is not. Joyce will stand up, and Joyce will be strong. So whenever Diane meets a new person who she's not familiar with, or with whom she's not familiar, trying to get the grammar right, with whom she's not familiar, she introduces herself as Joyce. Because Joyce is tough. This new person, who I don't know, is going to mess with me. Once she gets to know the person, and she feels comfortable with the person, then what does she do? She becomes Diane. She becomes her real self once again. Now, what's the problem? Is it a good strategy? It's a very good strategy. This way she can feel comfortable. What's the problem? The problem is, she is really convinced that she's also Joyce. That's the problem. However, the strategy itself is really a good strategy. You just take upon yourself a new identity, and you're there. The Rambam, in Hilchos Tshuva, tells us how to do tshuva. What does he say to do? One day you walk into yeshiva, your jeans, your t-shirt, your sneaks, and what's your name? Mikey. Are there any Mikeys in this yeshiva? Good. I'm glad I used the name that belongs. You're a Mikey? Mickey. Mickey, remind me to tell my Mickey story later. I have a good Mickey story. Mikey walks into yeshiva just being regular little Mikey. And then, sometime later, he decides that he really wants to devote his life to the pursuit of holiness. It's a big decision. So when somebody says, "What's your name?" you know what he answers? Michal Yosef Shimon Aaron Yehuda. That's my name. Say, "No, you're Mikey." No. I'm Michal Yosef Shimon Aaron Yehuda. That's me. That's the new identity. I once saw a movie. I used to stay up late at night. I was a little bit of an insomniac the last 30 years. In any event, so I was once staying up late. I was watching a late night movie. And there was a guy walking on the beach in Brooklyn, on the boardwalk, an old Jewish man. And then there was a... I don't want to say the name, you know, let's say the name. So it was, I'll call him a Krishna, a Hare Krishna guy. So this Hare Krishna, he's walking around, "Krishna, Krishna," whatever, that's Nachman with the dance that I'm doing. But I was doing some sort of funny dance, the Havdil Ben Uman the Krishna. So he's doing some dance, and "Krishna, Krishna." So he says, "Hey, what's your name?" So the young man says to him, "My name is Alabadubi Salahala." So he's giving his new Krishna name. He says, "You're not Alabaduli Salahala. You're David Horowitz." He goes, "No, I'm not David Horowitz. I'm Alabaduli Salahala." He goes, "No, David, how are you? I used to play with my grandson. How have things been?" What did he want to do? He came to this cult, and he wanted a new identity. So, a new identity means a new name. So that's the idea the Rambam says. Tshuva is not that you are doing something and you improve. Tshuva means that you transform yourself and you become a different person. Okay, do you lose your personality? No. You're still the same guy. You still have the same physiological makeup. You still have the same likes and dislikes, maybe, more or less. However, your basic identity has to change. Do you look at yourself as a body? Or do you look at yourself as a soul? Do you see yourself as an animal? That's one of the problems with evolution. Not only that it would seem very much to contradict the Torah, the problem is when a person sees himself as an overdeveloped monkey. So a person who sees himself, so then what do you think of yourself? How can you do holy acts? Why does anything you do have meaning? I'm just an overdeveloped monkey. Whereas when you see yourself as a godly soul, that's a completely different perspective. And that's what tshuva means. Tshuva means you're returning. Returning means you're returning to God, to that original pristine state where you're only a soul. That's where we all began. We were souls. We were with God. And tshuva is just viewing yourself in that way. In other words, a change in self-perception. That's all you have to do, we said, in one easy step. How to do tshuva? That's the one easy step. You just view yourself in a different light. And with that, I'll tell you another good story. This is a little bit more well known. This is about Yosef and his brothers. Yosef and his brothers had some very serious quarrels. And they thought he was a bratty kid. He has dreams. He's going to be the king. They're going to be bowing down to him. And he's the little brother. Who do you think you are, Joey? Right? So, he goes to the father. He says that my brothers are doing this, they're doing that. And then they decided that he is Chayav. He has to die. He's rebelling against the king, the commentaries explain. Yehuda has to be the king. He wants to be the king. He has to die. So what do? They take him. They throw him in a pit. And eventually they sell him to a bunch of Arab merchants. I told you the story, I'm sure, about the guy who is in the desert. And he's walking and he's walking. And all of a sudden he falls into a pit. I never told you this story. Oh my goodness. So he falls into a pit. And it's a boiling hot day, but boiling hot. And he's lying in the pit and he doesn't know what he's going to do. And he's thinking of Yosef in the pit. And he's lying there and all of a sudden he doesn't know what to do and he doesn't know what to say. And then a camel falls on top of him. And then he's lying in the pit and the camel's on top of him and he doesn't know what to do and he doesn't know what to say. And finally he breaks out into song and he says, Ashira Lashem, Higamala Lashem. So, anyone who doesn't know what I understand the joke, ask to show the bad guy sitting next to him. He's in the pit, they sell him, and he goes down to Egypt. 22 years pass, and it never occurs to them for 1 minute that Yosef's dreams were true. They were wrong and he was right. It never occurred to them. They thought all along. All along they were convinced that they were right. Anyway, they meet him, he starts asking them all these questions. You have a brother, you have a father. They still don't get it. Yosef is hiding himself. Finally, Yosef reveals himself and he says, I'm Joseph. It's me. I'm Yosef. It's me. I'm Yosef. So the Medrash says that when he said that, they couldn't answer him. So if when Yosef gives them such harsh rebuke, such admonishment, such, how do you say rebuke in Hebrew? Tohaha. Tohaha sounds strong. Tohaha. When you're getting said strong tohaha, you can't answer Yosef. So certainly when we come before God, what are we going to say? What are you going to say to God after 120 when he rebukes you? So the commentaries were very bothered by this message. Yosef never ever rebuked his brothers. Never. All he said was two words. What were the two words? Ani Yosef. That was the rebuke. Ani Yosef. And they said, what a harsh rebuke. Oh no. He said Ani Yosef. Wow. And they couldn't answer him. They were speechless. Speechless. And then imagine you, me, you, every single person in this room, when we go before God after 120, when God rebukes us, we're not going to know what to say. Not even Ashira Lashem Ki Gamal Olam. We're going to be speechless. So what was the rebuke he gave them? And what's the rebuke God's going to give us? So there was a great rabbi who lived in Poland 100 years ago, 1910s, 20s, named Rabbi Shmuel Bornstein. And he wrote a book called The Shame. So that's one of the easier Hasidic forms to understand. He is one of the, Moshe thinks I'm funny. He was one of the classic Hasidic forms. So he gives an explanation to this medrash. When I saw this explanation, I had to pay my upstairs neighbors because I jumped through their roof. Yeah, my roof, and I had to pay them. I broke through their floor. I jumped. He said as follows. All along, Yosef had a spiritual mask on his face. And the brothers couldn't see the Kedusha. What did they see when they saw Yosef? They saw a bratty little kid who used to make his hair nice. He used to play with his hair, Rashi says. Play with his hair, look in the mirror. He would dress nice. Yeah? And, I mean, the tzaddikim say that he did that because he was a king. He knew that his job was to be king, and a king has to look good. But they thought that he was just a bratty little brother who's too interested in the externals. That's what they thought. They didn't realize that Yosef was a repository of pure spirituality. Yosef was the holiest of holies. We know there's something called Mashiach ben David and Mashiach ben Yosef. He's the father of Mashiach ben Yosef. He got the Bechor from Reuven. Yosef was somebody very, very special. The brothers didn't realize that, they didn't see it. And Yosef didn't allow them to see it. And all along, when they were going back and forth, when the brothers came down to Egypt, Yosef was playing the game with them. He didn't want to tell them who he was. So he was masking his spirituality. It's about Moshe. Moshe put on a mask so the Jewish people couldn't see the light that was shining from his face. He also put on a mask. When Yosef said those two words, Ani Yosef, you know what happened? He showed his true colors. And when the brothers saw, imagine that the whole year, all year long, you're picking on somebody. You pick on him, you make fun of him, you know, you hide his things, you take away his food when he leaves the table for a minute, and then at the end of the year you realize that this guy is Reb Nemtzah. You heard about him, and then you realize the guy you were picking on all along was Reb Nemtzah. Wouldn't you be like horrified? I would be. So they realized all along the kid they were picking on was the Gadol HaDor, the greatest. Can you say anything when you realize that? That's the Ani Yosef. What's going to happen at the end of days? At the end of the days, every single person in this room, bar none, even those who have been to bars, bar none, every single person in this room, you heard two guys walk into a bar? Why would the second guy walk into it after the first guy? You know, I once wanted to be a comedian. I used to live on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. So I tried out. I did like a 15-minute monologue. And then the guy came up to me afterwards, like the manager of the club. And he said to me, Ehrman, keep your day job. What was so hurtful about that comment is, I never had a day job. I just didn't learn. So the point is that every person in this room, after 120, is going to go before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what do you think God is going to show you? What is God going to show you? Question. Answer. Who said yourself? Raise your hand if you're sure. Who said yourself? Did somebody say yourself? All the way in the back. Beautiful. God is going to show you yourself. Now that might not be so scary, but it is scary if you realize that yourself could be 5,000 times better than you really are, than you really ever thought you could be. That's scary. So imagine you go up to Shemayim. Imagine you go up to Shemayim, and God shows you that had you just paid a little bit more attention in biology class in 9th grade, chemistry in 10th, physics in 11th, and then taken pre-med in college, and then gone to medical school, you could have found the cure for cancer. Cancer is a very, very horrible disease. Many people are suffering from cancer. Imagine you knew that you could find a cure for cancer. How would you feel? And you didn't. What'd you do? You already count. Now, nothing wrong with being an accountant. But you could have found a cure for cancer, and instead you did people's taxes. You wouldn't feel so good about yourself. Let's say you could have been the Prime Minister of Israel, and you could have brought peace to the Middle East. By the way, I have the solution for peace in the Middle East. This is completely parenthetical. I say you give the Arabs their own state. This state should be located somewhere south of Antarctica. Send all the Arabs there, and I promise you, there will be peace in the Middle East. So, up until this point, My suggestion hasn't been embraced by the international community, but we're working on it. We're working on it. So, you could have brought peace to the Middle East. You could have stopped all the death and all the terrorist attacks and all the things that we've been suffering from for years. And you didn't. What did you become? You became a real estate lawyer. Very nice. Nothing wrong with becoming a real estate lawyer. That's all you could have become. You could have saved, you know, the Jewish people. You could have saved the Jews. And instead, what did you become? Let's just say, to make things a little bit more spiritual, you go up to Shemayim and you found out that you could have been the Tzadik Hador. You could have been. You could have known Shas by heart. You could have helped people. You could have reached the level of Ruach HaKodesh. And you didn't. You were just a regular guy. You had season tickets to the Knicks and to the Rangers and to the Yankees. And you were, you know, you were a member of your local Young Israel. And you went to shul, you know, every Shabbos morning, somewhere a few minutes before Musaf. Yes. So you were a good guy. You sent your kids in. But you could have been the Gadol HaDor. How would you feel? Could have had Ruach HaKodesh. You felt, oh, I really missed out, didn't I? And the rest of my eternity is going to be determined by what I did in my lifetime. So that's a big loss. So I have a Rebbe. It's a very holy man. His name is Rabbi Luzzatto. Rabbi Luzzatto started off in Italy, and he is famous for writing books of the Kabbalah and ethical character improvement. Rabbi Luzzatto says that every person, every Jew, can reach Ruach HaKodesh. As a matter of fact, Eliyahu HaNavi says in his book, known as Rabbi Luzzatto's book is in the Mesillas Yesharim. Eliyahu HaNavi's book is called Tanit Eliyahu. He says is that every human being, man, woman, child, goy, Jew, can get the divine spirit, can have Ruach HaKodesh, like those holy tzaddikim. Everybody can do it. If you completely devote yourself to God and to spirituality, you can do it. Now, everybody has a different task, and everybody has different potential and capabilities and talents, but everybody with their capabilities and talents can go far beyond what they ever dreamed. How are you going to find out? What did we learn from Green Eggs and Ham? You got to try. If you don't try it, then when you get there, you're not going to be able to answer God, and that's Gehenna. And want to know what Gehenna is? Hell, when somebody says go to hell? So you think to yourself, go to hell means to a place where I realize that I could have been something. I could have been somebody. I could have been somebody very, very great. Very holy. Very holy. And instead, I was just a regular guy. That is scary. Now, when I say very holy, I don't mean that you're not supposed to eat or drink or sleep or exercise or have a good time or be normal. It's very important. One of the most basic mitzvahs in the Torah is to be normal. You know where it says to be normal? Every mitzvah in the Torah cries out, be normal. Every mitzvah. We're not trying to make angels. We're trying to make human beings who are godly. That's all. Regular people like everybody else, put on your pants one leg at a time. You like chicken soup. Whatever it is to be a human being, but to be holy. How holy can you be? How holy can you be? I don't know. But that's why you're in yeshiva. You're in yeshiva to find out how holy you're going to be. How are you going to get there? The way you're going to get there is by changing your self-perception. Your self-perception is not just, oh, I'm just a regular guy. Your self-perception is that you're a very, very holy neshama, and that you have unlimited potential, which you're going to have to spend the next 50, 60, 80, 90 years trying to tap into. That's what you have to do. Recently, I was reading an article about Michael Jordan. You guys probably never heard of Michael Jordan. You were in high school, you were busy learning and davening and... But there's this activity that Gentiles engage in, because they don't have Torah and they don't know how to fill their time. So what they do is, they slaughter a cow, they take his skin, they blow hot air into it, they paint it orange, they wear their underwear, they run after it, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and millions of people watch as they try to put this ball into a hole. And there's a hole on both sides, but you better not put it in the hole on your team's side, because then it'll count for the other team, and then everybody will boo you and curse you out. So you have to put it in that hole. But then at halftime, you're going to switch. So you always have to remember. You have to have a good memory for that. And they go crazy over that, and they pay millions upon millions upon millions of dollars. And people who otherwise would be in jail, maybe sanitation, and they end up there anyway. But the sanitation worker, whatever it is, Baruch Hashem, and I say this in all seriousness, it takes them out of that element, and it puts them into the world of opportunity. Now they have lots and lots and lots of money, which they don't always necessarily know how to use. But they have lots and lots of money. Recently they said that one of the great players, I don't want to mention his name in the Beis Medrash, but one of the great players for the Cavaliers of Cleveland, Cleveland's holy, of course, because my wife comes from there, and I'm guessing a few people in this room. Where's Rafi? Rafi, you changed. But I'm so done. I'm sure you do too. So he said he had to nominate his favorite, you know, 25 most important people of the century or whatever, and he nominated Mr. Schottenstein because he said that he translated the Talmud into English. Just thinking, you know, if he would just put his money where his mouth is, then maybe he could start donating. Can you imagine? The James edition of the Talmud. You know, that's, he put his thing. He thinks that. Anyway, so these guys have lots and lots of money, and they run after. So this fellow that I was referring to before, this Jordan guy, so he was very good at that. His expertise was defying the laws of gravity. That's what he was able to do. So God gave him a gift. And his gift, and this was also in my heyday, as a matter of fact, I used to play basketball, I was compared to Jordan. People used to watch me play and say, he's no Jordan. So in his heyday, he could play something else. Some people say, the greatest ever. Okay, so what happens, as fate would have it, the way God created his world, is that you're only at the height of your physical peak, you're only at the peak of your physical output, and abilities until your late 20s, early 30s. Then it begins to slowly but surely deteriorate. And by the time you're 40, you're more or less an old man. By 40, almost everybody retires. Just about everybody. Without any, sometimes they get some outside help to remain young, but that outside help is usually illegal. So this person, he had to retire. So first he kept coming back and going back. And then he's going to play for, say, play professional baseball, play professional golf. Everyone's always guessing. Finally, his career came to an official end. So what happens if your career comes to an end? It's not over yet. Then there's the Hall of Fame. Then you wait to be elected to the Hall of Fame. So this man is going through a crisis now. What's his crisis? His crisis is that he was elected to the Hall of Fame. What did he say? He said as follows. It's over. My life is over. Because who am I? I'm a basketball player. So as long as I'm playing basketball, because I'm a somebody. As long as I'm not yet in the Hall of Fame, so now they're going to elect me to the Hall of Fame. But now that I'm elected, what am I? What is he going to do now? He's going to become a Rosh Kollel? He's going to become a professor at university? He's going to go to medical school? He's going to become an OBGYN? I was like, what is the guy? He's going to become a cardiologist? What is he going to do now? What? Now he's just a regular guy. A regular guy, I don't know him personally. But I'm guessing not any more gifted than the average guy, and quite possibly a lot less gifted. The way God usually does it is that if he makes you really, really good in one area, so in other areas you're not. So he gave him that basketball talent that he had beyond anybody else. And now, he's in all likelihood a sub-average human being. Nothing. What does he have? He said, his marriage broke up. So he's got a lot of money. What is he going to do? What is he going to do with all this money? He's going to buy a meal, but after a while you're just full. You're full. So what is he going to do? Buy a bigger house. You know, I was in New York recently, and I was staying in someone's house. Baruch Hashem, I have a nice, you know, in Jerusalem, we should have small apartments. I was staying in a good friend of mine's house, a very big tzaddik, and he put me up, really, had a guest room, all the way upstairs in the fourth floor. I was thinking, wow, my whole building has four floors. All right, this guy's got four floors just in his house. And I was thinking, like, every time I needed to get something from the room, I had to walk up two flights. So, you know, you're building your house bigger and bigger. It just means whenever you forget something in the other room, you have to walk longer. So it's not always it is advantageous. I have a big house. But it also has a disadvantage. What is he going to do? He identified himself as a basketball player. And now that he's no longer a basketball player, he no longer has an identity. Now he's just a nobody. Because from basketball player to not basketball, now he's nobody. So why was I happy when I heard it? When Mickey told me his name is Mickey. So there used to be another man. This is another one of the favorite hobbies of the Gentiles. And that is, they take a piece of wood, yes, and then they take a small spherical object, And then they have a man standing on a little hill, 60 feet and 6 inches away, and he throws the ball as fast as he can, usually 90, 100 miles an hour, very impressive, at the man standing with a piece of wood. And the man standing with a piece of wood, his job is to hit the ball as hard as he can so that he can run and get to where he is presently standing. That's what it comes down to. He's going to run and get all the way around and go through this whole thing just so he can get to where he is. However, when he gets there, people are going to give him a little patch on the tush, and he's going to feel good about himself. So that's the goal of this game. So Mickey, there was a guy who played for the Yankees named Mickey Mantle. So Mickey Mantle used to say that people would come up to him after his career ended, and they used to say to him, "Hey, didn't you used to be Mickey Mantle?" What were they saying? They were saying that as long as you're playing baseball, as long as you're on the Yankees, you're Mickey Mantle. Now who are you? You're nobody. You're not Mickey Mantle anymore because you're not playing for the Yankees. That's his self-identity. What the Rambam is telling us about tshuva is that your self-identity has to be that of a holy person, of a special person, of a person close to God. And then the moment you view yourself that way, so what's going to happen? So it's going to be vacation time, and all of your friends are going to be going to the Inbal. Inbal, if you do the gematria, comes out in Hebrew, the seminary girls. So they're going to be going there, and they're going to be hanging out with those girls. They're going to be talking, and they're going to go from one to the other, to have what, being an eyewitness many, many times, are mindless conversations. And they're going to talk about nothing until they go to the next girl and talk about nothing with her. So that's what's going to happen. And you're going to say to yourself, wait a second. I'm a holy neshama. This is beneath me. It's beneath me to just walk around. I'm going to waste 5 hours of my life? I can save the world. The Rambam says the way you're supposed to look at the world is like this. We're half okay, half about to be destroyed. 50-50. If you do one good thing, you can save the world. If you do one bad thing, you can destroy the world. That's the way the Rambam wants you to know. He wants you to know that every act you do is extremely important. And it is important. It's important. It's going to determine the rest of your eternity. So if you view yourself as a neshama, it's not going to be any. It's not even going to be a test for you. Should I go? Shouldn't I go? It's just beneath me. My time is too valuable. I'm not saying you shouldn't have friends. I'm not saying you shouldn't have a good time. Friends and a good time are part of being a human being. It says that there are 48 ways to acquire Torah. One of the ways to acquire Torah is to sleep, believe it or not. And that's why I always say, my shiurim, I help boys acquire Torah through that vehicle. Sleep, it says sleep, not too much, but sleep. Another way it says that it helps you acquire Torah is to laugh. One of the 48 ways to acquire Torah, yeah, not too much, but you have to laugh a little bit. That's what it says. One of the other ways is to schmooze. You also have to talk to people. You have to be a normal human. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that when I'm going, the Inbal is already is a more tame example. There are other places that are even less appropriate for yeshiva students to be. So guys are going to want to go there, and you're going to say, how can I do that? How can I do that? How can a mouth that says, Hashem hu Elokim on Yom Kippur, that's opposite the Kol Delam Aravi, that's learning Maseches Bava Kama, these angels, says in Chazal that the smallest Amora could make people rise from the dead. I'm learning the words of these holy sages, and then I'm gonna contaminate myself with this filth that you're watching on the screen. You wouldn't even think of it. It's just beneath your dignity. Like, let's say you would watch your friends. They were just rolling around in the mud, making pig noises. I don't know what noises pigs make, but we'll assume it's honk honk. going. And they were, wouldn't you think that's just slightly a little bit beneath you? And you would, why? Because you're a human being. You're not a pig. Imagine you go, this Shabbos, I have a close friend who's having a bar mitzvah at the King David. My close friends are usually age 12 to 14. That's my close friend's son. So my close friend's son is having a bar mitzvah at the King David. So why is he having it there? Because he wants his guests to enjoy themselves. They're going to be treated like kings. So imagine you go to the King David, and you say you get a free meal, and they say to you, say to me, one condition, though, I'll invite you, but I want you to sit under the table, and we're going to put the food on a plate, and I want you to just eat it straight with your mouth, off the floor, off the plate. Would you eat it? It would be a complete insult to your very humanity. How could I do that? I'm a human. You're treating me like a dog? You give me King David, you can give me King anything. I'm not going to be treating you like a dog. It's a dog named King. They call their dogs King. Rodney Dangerfield with the famous comedian saying, my wife treats me like a king. She says, here, king, here. So you treat me like a dog. I'm not going to be treated like a dog. So it's not just that we're human beings. It's that we're neshamas. And when you see yourself as a neshama, then most of what's around you is just beneath you. You're not interested. Is this going to in any way enhance me, edify me, enlighten me, make me more spiritual, make me more sensitive, make me more understanding? Or not? And if it's not, it's beneath you. You know, I once heard a good story about a guy who took his son to a Knicks game. He took his son to a Knicks game. And during the game, there were some people who were drinking, and they were a little bit rowdy. So they were rowdy, they were probably using some four-letter words. I don't include Torah as a four-letter word. Yeah, sorry. Bad four-letter words. Yeah. And the father wanted to teach his son a lesson. And he said, you see, son, what happens when you drink? Look at the way they're acting, like animals. You know what his son said to him? He said, Dad, you and your friends who go to the Kiddush Club on Shabbos morning, that's exactly what you look like. So this guy had recently called the rabbi, and the rabbi spoke out against Kiddush Clubs, and he had ripped into him. So afterwards, he came back to the rabbi, and he said, Rabbi, I want to apologize. You're 100% right. You don't realize what you look like until somebody else said that. That's exactly. When you see it as an outsider, you say, that's me. So, lost in love after 120, you're going to look back and you're going to say, that was me. I can't believe it. I was acting that way. I was speaking that way. In the basement, I'm going like this. And then in the dorm, I curse. And I steal. Every year we have problems with stealing. I never understood it. The whole year we're learning Bava Kamma. And we're learning about, you know, you have to pay and you owe and who owes who. And you're now going to do damage. And then people steal. So there shouldn't be a Yetzer Hara to steal. You shouldn't even want it because it's so, what am I? I'm a convict. I'm a guy with 8 tattoos on my arm and I'm some, you know, lowlife. I'm a holy neshama. How could I possibly do that? I once heard a good story, a good cow story, that there was once a town, a village, in which you bought your wife with cows. If you wanted a not such a good looking wife, we'll be generous and polite, 2 or 3 cows. If you want an average wife, 7 cows. If you want a really, really good wife, 7, 8, 9. You want the top of the top, the most beautiful, the most attractive, 10 cows. So the shrewdest guy in town decided he's going to get for himself a wife, and everybody knew that since he's so shrewd, he's going to get the best wife for the least number of cows. What happened? In the end, he got the ugliest, dullest girl in town for 14 cows. Nobody could believe it. It was a shock. Everybody was talking about it. You're going to spend for this ugly girl, you can't even look, she looks like a cow. You're going to spend 14 cows. How could it be? Anyway, sometime later, somebody knocks on their door, and all of a sudden, this woman opens the door, and the man sees the most beautiful, radiant woman he has ever seen in his life. And he starts talking to her. He sees she's got so much personality. She's so special. And he couldn't understand what happened. He knew the guy married him. He knew he hadn't married somebody else. So what happened? So he took his friend aside, and he put his arm around his sweetest friend. You got to tell me the secret. What happened to your wife? When you got married to her, you know, and now, it's like, whoa! So he said, you know what happened to my wife? I'll tell you. Every morning, he's the shrewd guy. Remember, he's the shrewd guy. 14 counts. Every morning, she looks in the mirror, and she says that my husband bought me with 14 cows. What does that say about me? And she started looking better, and she started acting better, and it made a complete transformation in who she was. Because she saw herself not as the ugly loser, but as a woman for whom he's willing to spend, the shrewdest guy in town is willing to spend 14 cows. Our job in life, and particularly in yeshiva, is to look at ourselves the same way. To see ourselves, even though right now we might not look so good to ourselves, but to see ourselves as somebody who's worth 14 cows, as somebody very holy and somebody very special. And if that's our self-perception, if that's our self-identity, then we have a chance to really do tshuva shlema and come close to God. And there is no doubt about it that when a person is close to God, he is always the simcha. 2, 3, 4. Hey.
Do I start shepherds in my head? Do I start shepherds in my body? Do I start shepherds in my head? 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 Do I start shep